Steerpike knocked with his knuckle on the lintel of the window.
"Good afternoon, madam,"
he said. "May I present my card?" And he handed Fuchsia a slip of paper bearing the words, "His Infernal Slyness, the Arch Fluke Steerpike." She motioned him to descend to the floor of the room. At her gesture, he unknotted a rope from his belt and flung the loose end out of the window where it dangled. Fuchsia, leaning out of the window, gazed upwards and saw the rest of the rope ascending the 7 remaining stories to a ragged roof, where presumably it was attached to some turret or chimney.
"All ready for my return," said Steerpike. "Nothing like rope, madam. Better than a horse. Climbs down a wall whenever you ask it and never needs feeding."
"You are certainly one for climbing," Fuchsia said at last. "You climbed to my attic. Do you remember?"
Steerpike nodded.
"And you climbed up the library wall when it was burning. It seems very long ago."
"And the time, if I may say so, Lady Fuchsia, when I climbed through the thunderstorm and over the rocks with you in my arms."
It was as though all the air had been suddenly drawn from the room, so deathly silent and thin had the atmosphere become. Steerpike thought he could detect the faintest tinge of colour on Fuchsia's cheekbones. At last he said,
"One day, Lady Fuchsia, will you explore with me the roofs of this great house of yours?"
"Yes," she replied. "Yes."
His sharp, pallid face repelled her, but she was attracted by his vitality and air of secrecy. She was about to ask him to leave, but he was on his feet before she could speak and had jumped through the window and was swinging to and fro on the jerking rope before he started swarming it, hand over hand, on his long, upward climb to the ragged roof above. When Fuchsia turned from the window, she found upon her rough dressing table a single rosebud. The sky had darkened, and with the rising of a swift wind came the driven rain. With the rope neatly coiled about his waist, Steerpike ran like a shadow across an acre of sloping slates. Suddenly, ducking his head beneath an arch, he fell to his knees and hauled up, with a grating of hinges, a long-forgotten skylight. In a moment he was through, and had dropped into a small empty room 12 feet beneath. Steerpike uncoiled himself of the rope and looped it over a nail in the wall. Steerpike turned to the door, listening a moment, and then opened it. He had before him a dusty landing, and veering to the left, he followed a corridor for some way before he reached a stairhead. No sooner had he peered over the banisters than he started back, for the Countess of Groan was passing through the lamp-lit room below. She seemed to be wading in white froth, and the hollow rooms behind Steerpike reverberated with a dull throbbing, a multitudinous sound, the echo of the genuine ululation which he could not hear, the droning of the cats. The Countess walked with a frown on her brow. She was not satisfied that the immemorial sense of duty and observance was universally held sacrosanct in the wide network of the castle. She was turning over all the fragments of knowledge which might relate to the mysterious burning of her late husband's library, to his disappearance, and to the disappearance of his chef. She was using almost for the first time a naturally powerful brain, a brain that had been purred to sleep for so long by her white cats that it was difficult at first for her to awaken it. She was on her way to the doctor's house. He had always irritated her, but against her own inclination she had always felt a certain peculiar confidence in him. Prune Squalor was in his armchair, in his study. But he was not destined to more than a few moments of relaxation, for feet were soon to be heard outside his window. Prune Squalor could recognize that portentous gait among a million. Reaching the door before his bell could clang the servants into redundance, he opened it, and to the massive figure who was about to whack the door with her fist.
"I welcome your ladyship. How delightful that you should call.
His body inclined itself a little from the hips, and his teeth flashed, while he wondered what, in the name of all that was heterodox, the Countess thought she was doing in visiting her physician at this time of night.
"Prune Squalor,"
said the Countess, who had moved to the window and was staring out across the quadrangle.